Hello, and welcome to DIY Oberlin, a show featuring makers, crafters, artists, and hackers, and tinkerers of all ages and varieties with strong ties to Oberlin and surrounding communities. Each week, we'll feature a different maker and get to know a bit about their craft and their Oberlin story. I'm your host, Abby Oresti. Let's do this.
You can kind of see how the color shifts a little, but the color shift, I did it yesterday, which is when the mordant goes on. It's a noisy table.
Now, is that the texture of the paper, or it's just like that it's getting wet in different spots?
You mean the wrinkling or the
bubble?
Yeah, it's just that it was already wrinkling. Like yesterday, I think when I put it on, it was kind of this is not a great piece, but I'm still it didn't. I guess it gets, so paper, as it gets wet, it expands because it's absorbing. And so you can see almost here, you can see the pull of the brush as I was, and so it distorts, it also gets weaker and then it's easier to distort.
Mm-hmm.
That's why most, like I think professional dyers would dip dye, you know, they dip dye in vertical baths.
So, oh, wow.
But I'm just doing this for fun. And I mean,
so this isn't tied to the other project?
No, this is just like there's so many different steps of like if I wanted, like you saw with the persimmon dye, if I want a different color paper where I'm dyeing the paper, I have to first dye the paper before I print onto it. So if I do this now, then I'll have the dyed paper ready to go. Or it's also sometimes I don't have a project, but I see the dyed paper and I think, oh, I actually want to do this other thing.
Today's DIY Oberlin is the last show in this first season of this series. If you were listening last week, we spoke with Amy Lee, who is an Oberlin alum and a papermaking artist specializing in hanji, or Korean papermaking. Amy was kind enough to come out to Oberlin for our first conversation to visit Tamara, and we had a really wide-ranging conversation. One of the things that I'm just always blown away by your work in general is just the sheer variety of what paper can be and what it can do. All of your work just has such a range of shapes and textures and like the strength and, you know, like these characteristics where, you know, you pick up a piece of paper and a book and you're like, oh, you know, whatever. But like, it's just, I don't know, it's just incredible to me.
Yeah, I think that that's why I had always told myself I will continue to work with hanji as my main, or essentially paper, but hanji really as my main material until it no longer is interesting or it kind of, I exhaust its possibilities. And over time, I realized I can definitely do it for the rest of my life because there will be no end. And it's not just what Koreans did for centuries or what I do, but other people are also doing amazing new old things. You know, there's almost, it's true, there's nothing new, but everyone has their own way of approaching it. And so, because I know it's rooted in a culture and a history where they used it for many different things, that I know it can do so many different things, that why wouldn't I want to explore all of those methods. But I also think that that's true for any material. I've listened to people give talks who are master like forgers, and they talk about iron and how amazing iron is. And it was like the first element in the Big Bang or whatever. And it's been around, and look at all these things you can do. And then I've talked to a glass artist talking about how important glass is. Do you see where glass, you know, how windows changed our lives, and the Hubble Space Telescope, and how long it took to cure that piece of glass, and then it didn't work, and they had to do it all over again. And you can say that about so many different materials, and it's just about finding the one that really resonates with you, that you're compelled to share that story and to explore it.
I was so excited when Amy invited me to visit her studio in Cleveland, where I got to see so much of her artwork firsthand, and she even walked me through the papermaking process. It was such a treat, and I wanted to be able to share this special visit with you as a goodbye for this season.
This is actually scraps of cotton printmaking paper, and then abaca, like fresh abaca, which is, it's already partially processed when you get it, but it's from the leaf of the banana plant. And then the brown is all pigment. It's burnt umber that I'd gotten as a dry pigment ground by windmills. Is it like northwest of Amsterdam at this like old windmill village where they've been running that windmill continuously for, I'm guessing, hundreds of years, and it grinds pigments. And so I wanted to make brown paper for this Brown Hands Working collaboration I'm doing with three other people who are either artists or like scholars of book arts and printing. So it's a collaboration where we're doing a print portfolio. So this, I forgot to bring the, this will be like, what I want to print on this is basically two hands that are separating bark lace, which I don't have a good sample of, but this is just, I mean, the bark raw would be like this.
Can I touch
it? Yeah, of course you can touch everything. Okay. And then this is actually like not good, like this is almost like, it's like scraps of like bark and lace that failed. I wasn't really happy with this, but
you processed this somehow?
Or well, this is I when you get it.
Oh, when it gets like
it comes like this, and it's, you know, it's like it's pretty hard.
Yeah. So it's like these little sticks. It almost looks like mini bones.
Yeah. Well, like they come. I'll show you in the beater room. I have bigger pieces. And then after I cook it in an alkaline solution, it softens, and then I can spread it out. And this is technically what you use to make paper. And usually we beat it, but in this case, I wasn't beating it. I was just
lace?
I call it bark lace. And it's something that I learned in Korea. But I also learned it in grad school in Chicago. We had this one teacher who taught us about tapa and kappa and amate and these bark substrates that were used in like Latin, South America, and then the Pacific Islands, Hawaii. And so I already knew, I mean, anyone who works with this material, well, you just kind of, even accidentally, you'd see this happen after it's cooked, that it would come apart really easily.
It's really beautiful.
Yes. And I didn't bring the book, but This is something that's happened all across like the global South, and
so you're pulling it.
Yeah, I would pull it apart. I would pull it apart. Just that's how you lace it. Is because otherwise it's just all compressed like it's like this, and then after you cook it, you can actually see the structure of the plant itself. Like this is how the plant is. Like it's that it just naturally has this kind of crisscross lattice work, and so. Different people in different cultures would realize that different plants could do things like this. And so it was a different plant, like fig trees in, let's say, Mexico, or the lace bark tree in the Caribbean. But it was mostly paper mulberry in the Pacific Islands, Hawaii, Southeast Asia.
And then, so I want for the print to have hands holding it as if they're pulling it apart, because that's the process, almost like this. But then I would print this lace and then cut out the thumbs of this paper and then tuck the print under here so it looks like it's being handled, and then have all this text about the history of Barclays and the importance to basically non-white people. And so I can show you.
Can I ask, are you screen printing?
So I'm printing the actual lace. So I'm inking. See, this is the actual lace.
Oh.
And I've inked, you can even see the grease coming out from the printing ink, because an oil-based ink.
Oh, wow. So then
I put it in the press and I put paper over it. And when you run it through, the ink transfers to the paper. And I foolishly didn't bring a sample to show you, but you can see I was trying to work with white ink, which is very difficult. And then this is actually more inspired by the amate that was done in Latin South America.
Is it cut?
It's also the bark, but I just have thin pieces that I run parallel strips one way, parallel strips perpendicular the other way, and they're separated from each other. You know, I have space in between, and then I just take a rock and I bang on it. When it's wet.
Okay, and
it after I cooked it. Yeah, and it fuses. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't fuse completely, but it's a pretty decent bond, at least for this purpose. So this is all just, so cool. It's ink on it.
Mm.
You can see some of the ghosts from the prints that I had been doing.
Oh, wow.
Actually, this is, so I actually first did, and this I think I was using mostly paper made by one of my teachers in Korea, or his apprentice. And then I coat it in persimmon juice, which is why it's brown. You can see the brush strokes. But then after that, I inked the lace and then printed the bark onto it directly. And you can see that's happening all throughout, all the different little pieces. And then I sewed them all together in sewing machine.
It's so beautiful. How long have you been doing that?
That printing? I just started. I've been wanting to do it for a while, and I started printing early this year because I told myself this year I would dedicate myself more to my artwork and pull back more from teaching, because that just takes up so much of my time. So I had a student, Yuko Kimura, who's an artist in Cleveland, and she learned to make the bark lace from me, and then she started printing or using it as a resist, and I was like, oh, so beautiful. And so I wanted to try more of it. But my idea was essentially, like, see that bark dress in the center, like, hanging on this big one?
Oh, wow, yeah.
So that's all, that's 100% just this bark lace. So, and I do need to figure out this. I realized once it's hanging, because I built it on the floor, because I had to glue it. This I couldn't sew together. This would not have done well in the sewing machine.
It looks delicate.
But I need to build some kind of hoop to keep it open.
Mm.
Like, I don't want it to crease in like that. I don't want it to be just. But anyway, you can see, so that top part is all that gridded bark. And then the accents, like the cuffs and the collar and the bow is all the bark lace, and then the skirt's all the bark lace. And then before I sew this together, so I cut apart. I had to make big panel here. Here's a panel. There's a messy panel, but one of the panels of the bark, the gridded bark, which is inspired by the amate. I have a airport sample. Like when I was leaving Mexico, I was on residency. In 2007 in Mexico, so I wanted to get some kind of sample. So even this is a touristy sample.
This is something you bought from.
I bought from the airport to at least have some kind of sample of amate, so you can see, like here. You can see the bark was spread in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And what you kind of don't see is what's on the, should be on the other side, that the other ones would have been this way.
Okay.
And then they're beaten with a rock.
So it's a grid, sort of.
So it starts as a grid, but they're using bigger pieces and they're intending to close all the holes. Mm-hmm. So if you beat it flat, then it all comes together, fills in the gaps. Mm. But what I was doing was intentionally keeping it open and having thinner pieces. But this was then used as a writing substrate and for books. And I want to say Mayan culture had tons and tons of books and libraries. And it was the Spanish who came and just burned them all because they wanted to be able to say, oh, these are like uncivilized heathens. Mm. But they actually had a much more developed civilization than the Spaniards. So they tried to get rid of all evidence of that. So those are the things that, it's not just the Korean traditions, but kind of globally, the things that people, essentially, like, how they figured out what to do with plants. It's really amazing.
And if you are just joining us, this is WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And you are listening to DIY Oberlin, a show featuring makers, crafters, artists, and hackers, and tinkerers of all ages and varieties with strong ties to Oberlin and surrounding communities. This week on the show, we're speaking with internationally renowned artist Amy Lee.
So I would make that grid panel, then I would cut it into the pattern for the dresses. But before I didn't sew that. Before I put it together, this grid, like this actual grid, I then used to pressure print that piece.
Oh.
So these are exactly the pieces that are actually on that. And pressure printing is a slightly different way of printing where, like, the thing you want to, it's like, let's say this is what you want to print, like that's the grid, but instead of putting the ink on it and then putting the paper on it, you actually put the paper here and then you ink a separate panel, like let's say this is an acrylic panel that has ink on it, and then you go like that. And you send it all through the press, and then when you remove that, what happens is that the pressure from this, which is an uneven grid, pushes up through the paper and against the ink, and it hits that rigid piece slightly differently. So where there's more pressure, you get more ink transferred.
Oh wow!
So then you actually can get a pretty good impression. And then the great thing is, and then this actually, so the skirt is, it's the same print, but it's turned inside out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because.
So it's a lighter, so it's
So the top part of the dress is this darker.
Right.
Grid, and then it's like this lighter.
Right, because it's the backside of the paper, which was essentially white. And then, but there's a nut, because it's such a thin paper, so lightweight, a lot of the ink kind of comes through. Mm. And traditionally these dresses, this Korean hanbok, they were usually contrasting colors. Or, I mean, if you were really poor, you couldn't. But if you had access to color, the natural dye, then you would want to show, you know, contrast. So to show, instead of having the whole dress be that dark grid, I wanted the contrast. So same with these, the collar, the cuffs, the bow are all turned inside out from the print. And then there's still so much ink left on the plate that one over there is the ghost.
Oh.
So then the plate now, after you removed the paper, the rigid acrylic plate now has an impression of that pressure print. Mm. And there's still enough ink. So then I print that plate directly onto paper. So this is now all a direct transfer from that one.
And these must be giant sheets, I'm thinking.
Well, these are actually, I mean, the paper, it's, you know, unlimited. Like, I have, the paper is this big.
Okay.
So how big would you? I have to seam them together. This is about 2 by 3 feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know if you want this sound, but I'm just going to take it.
Yeah.
Here, it won't be as good here because it's not on metal, but you can try it and see how it. And this one will be softer, it won't be as. Yeah, so this probably won't do much, but oh well.
There's a plane. I know. There's always a plane. At the most critical moments.
Always. Yes. How it happens. And so what I'm doing here is I'm just using the last of my coreopsis dye, and this is, you're not going to hear much, but. When the brush starts, it's loaded with liquid, mm-hmm. and so it goes down heavier, and so it might be that the mordant, and you can see it's like not an, it's not like an even wash, like it's like mottled. Part of that is because of I was using a brush, and part of that. Nature of the paper. Like this paper is different hanji from that paper. So it's like softer and more absorbent.
What is the fiber for this?
This is all still paper mulberry, but this is like not as good. Like it's made sometimes from recycled paper. So anytime you recycle a paper, it's gonna be less, it's gonna be softer and less strong than the original sheet. So, but this is just used for, usually for things like when they're doing any kind of ceremony where they want to burn the paper. So it's not important that it's really high quality. But, and then I'm always, yeah.
What sort of ceremony, like for burning paper?
Like some people believe in offering, I don't remember if it's Buddhism, but some people believe in offering burnt, I think it is actually Buddhism, where you burn paper that's in shapes or print there. They print actually things like money or horses back in the day. Now it's like Mercedes and things that you burn so it goes up to the heavens where all the now dead people are, or now their spirits and then they can in their life have a nice horse or Mercedes or lots of money. And so in China, I think it's called joss paper, and it's a very, very lightweight, really inexpensively made paper. But you want it to be light, so it like burns really easily and doesn't. You want that it to burn and just go up, the smoke to go up, and not for like heavy ashes to fall down too much, because that's not a great sign. But yeah, so Buddhist priests in Japan, they make specific for certain festivals of that kind of nature. They will make clothes out of Japanese paper, and then they'll burn all these things, and then the ashes that fall down will kind of singe the robes. And they have still some samples of these singed robes. But I'm always amazed when I do this that somehow always have just enough.
That is very impressive.
It's kind of like, you know, like cooking where you have to.
Yeah.
Or finding the right container for your leftovers, you know.
And if you are just joining us, this is WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And you are listening to DIY Oberlin, a show featuring makers, crafters, artists, and hackers, and tinkerers of all ages and varieties with strong ties to Oberlin and surrounding communities. This week on DIY Oberlin, we're speaking with internationally renowned artist Amy Lee. Ooh, what a nice sink.
Oh, yeah. No, necessary.
Yeah. I was noticing this hanging sculpture.
Oh, the link. Well, yeah.
Is that thread? Is that paper thread?
Oh, yeah. So what's right next to the bark on the table is actually the thread. So there's a way, and that I could learn in Korea, but... So you can make the bark lace, but also, and again, I don't have a sample of when it's soft from being cooked. Sometimes there are pieces that you kind of pull off, but you can also start pulling off the ends of these, and then when they're soft and they're wet, you just twist them, and then I make all of this bark thread.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's not really thread.
So it's not spun, because I remember you.
Right. Well, it's technically it is spun.
Or not like dropped.
It's yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's. I don't know what even the real definition of thread is, but I call it bark thread, and I don't. Some people would probably, when it's wet, try to then splice it with more.
Mm.
But I like to just keep them, and I sort them by length. Oh yeah, of course.
Okay, because it's actually it's softer than I was imagining. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, no, go ahead.
Like, yeah, so it's like it isn't soft,
right?
But it's softer than I was imagining by looking at it. Because I almost
thought they would be like.
Like little twigs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's because they've been cooked, so they will still be a little less rigid because we've taken out, in the cooking process, taken out things like lignins, which are the kind of structure, the thing that keeps the plant rigid, so that some of those are taken out. But then I would just take these and I would just make these loops.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very simple, it's just a square knot, and then just do more. But but I was making, I haven't yet figured out what I want this to be, but, so yeah, they're just, I mean, it's so simple, and again, it's like just things that people have been doing probably for like as long as humans have been alive, like humans have been humans. You know, like daisy chains, like just playing with dandelions, and so this was just more like a storage option.
Okay.
Because I need to keep them separated because all of these little knots often will, like, you know, they'll like hook onto each other.
Oh.
Like it tangles like crazy, but the idea was to have them in space and more dimensional, so which also is just kind of like, what is that? I don't know. It's very boring. But also, I mean, artists do this kind of work all the time. It's just stuff in space. So I don't know yet. And I don't know yet if I want links between them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or to try to make them a messier grid or anything like that.
No,
but I do want it, I don't want it just flat. I do want it into space.
Sure. Now, are any of these dyed, or it's just the natural?
It's just the natural color, and then depending on which batch of bark and which part of the bark, because often when it comes, the people in Thailand who do the processing haven't scraped off maybe as much of the outer layer, and then you get more of the dark bark, and some of it is more just coming from the inner layer, and then you have the light stuff, or maybe it depends on how it's been cooked, and there's so, but yeah, all of the color is just from the bark itself.
So because I'm just noticing this like beautiful variation in color, and did you intentionally like have stacks of different, or does it happen just by chance?
No, they're mostly, I would do a batch and then I would make another batch, and often that batch is a different color. So I, especially within the chain, it wasn't too intentional. Though I did try to keep it, like, within each chain, I would try to keep it all be uniform. But that isn't, that would be a nice idea if I was planned it. And then it would create some other image. But it was more just trying to experiment with it. Well, it's more so much just like, what would it look like first? So you mm-hmm. have to make it. Mm-hmm. And then once it's a thing, then you're like, oh, then you can see more. Yeah. And that's what's so hard, I think, especially for my students to understand. Like, you can't just keep thinking about it. You have to just make it. And so something that's kind of related to this in terms of, again, just like many, many parts making up a whole. It's a little hotter in here. It's going to be louder.
Another room.
This is just technically the gallery part.
Oh, cool. That's not the gallery.
So for now, it's storage for this piece.
It's beautiful. This is the bricks.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to see them in person. The photos are amazing.
And then here you can.
Wow.
They're really cool. I'm going to go from the back and try to pop out some too, so you have some.
Performance. Speaking of performance,
I was totally like, oh,
like sample it. Yeah. Oh, can I see in the box?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, wow. So they
like left they're all open.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And they have these clips to hold them. I was curious. Yes. Wow.
Otherwise, it would all just fall.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's good, because then you didn't have to, like, tie a million knots or something.
I remember the first time, the iteration of this, when I did my MFA thesis, which was now, I think, what did I say, 2006, so it's a long time ago. I did try to tie a lot of, well, at that time I didn't have the idea of disintegrating, but even then I had to do it in pieces to transport it, so I tied knots, I had these buttons that act as stoppers. I was like, all these things. In the end, I just had to glue them together because I also, they just didn't all work together. And the other problem was I didn't realize all of my molds were just kind of slightly different sizes, which I'm not a mason, but I was like, oh, there's a reason that bricks are all the same exact size. So, but yeah, so they're, and the nice thing with Eclipse is that, I can move them really easily. So if I say, like when I'm installing it, it's like, oh, you know, this one's down. Oh, like let's move it up, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then if they come to the back, well, fine. That's the whole point, is that mm-hmm. it's not even a real thing in terms of, like it's like just kind of on the, it's just barely hanging together. I mean, it isn't really,
And I do see what you mean about it sort of swaying.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me so much of what my grad advisor had said, Melissa J. Craig, which was paper is alive. It's like a living, breathing thing. So it's still taking in everything that's in the atmosphere, not just the, like any kind of toxins and dust, and then it's breathing, you know. And that's why, like with dyeing, it expands and it contracts when it dries, and that's why when I pull the sheet off, it's like that crisp. Yeah.
Now, are any of these the original? I remember you said you.
No, I'll show you. There. Well, I'll show you the bag that they're in. But so this is the one that's going to Columbus.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's gonna be a lot of fun to take.
Oh no.
I mean, but you can see.
Oh wow.
They're attached to that wood. There's a wood strip, and then I basically just get on a ladder, and I let it down on a tarp, and then I kind of roll it all up.
Oh wow!
And put it in a truck.
So you have a system now.
Yeah, I have to, because it's already gone to a couple shows now. So. But I'll show you where the other ones are.
Now, do you do all of your sewing and everything here as well?
No.
Okay.
No, I do that. Watch out. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. So on the top shelf, it's all rolled up in a tarp. Yeah just the bricks.
Let me get my stick and then...
There's so many different spaces in here.
That's
why.
That's my beater room and fiber storage area.
Nice.
But, we'll see if they sound different from...
The collection of...
These are actually all glued together.
Oh!
And then they're rolled up.
Oh, wow.
So it's one section of the wall, and I have...
The original?
Yeah, the original. Yeah. And then I have one smaller section that's hanging in my dining room at home, and then one tiny, tiny section at home. It's just kind of almost like a remembrance. But, and then I actually, I don't know if you saw over... Over here is like
a. Yeah, no, I did notice.
Yeah.
Is it, and this is from
this the original? This is the rejects. So what happened is that because I had to, that one is almost an expanded version of the original. I had to make new bricks, but I'm not great at color matching. So I made a bunch of batches, and when I put them all together, I was like, those colors don't work. So I just had to, the one outside is more like, much warmer, like orangey and yellow, and this is like a little more muted, and I think part of it is because I started with, I think actually, you know what this was? I think this is leftover pulp from our workshop. So you remember it was, I had like blue, green, and yellow, and gray. I think there was a lot of gray pulp left. And so when you start with gray instead of white and you add pigments, obviously it's not going to be the same color. So it's kind of more, it's more muted.
So from my class?
Yeah, you the circuits class.
Wow.
Not all of it, but I think some. And then some of it is like the stuff with specks in are from, it's from milkweed. Milkweed seeds and fluff. And I was just testing how some of them would work. And it was also kind of a test to see which, like this is, that's abaca. But then this is, well, that's milkweed, but then there's maybe some that are like, this might be more cotton. And the abaca usually works better because I'll show you the molds actually. Right. So each brick is a like 2-inch insulation foam that's cut, but then cut into thirds with a slant. And then I have wax paper pinned in because I wrap, when the paper is wet, I'll wrap it around and then leave this part a little open. And then as it, after it dries, now the paper shrunk around it, and that's where you get these rounded edges. Because it's shrunk, if I didn't cut it into three pieces, I couldn't get it out. So this, and because it's slanted, it helps with the physics of getting it. So I take out this piece, and then I tease out the other two pieces. But, yeah, that, and then I mark all of these so that I know which one goes together. And then you can see some of them, I'm like, oh, I don't like, the molds are not good. Like, they either, sometimes the angle, this angle is too steep and it just pops out on its own. So,
Did you discover, like, did you figure that out from trial and error, or did you, like, have a sense going in?
Well, because this was the engineering I had figured out with actually my old boss, Robin Ami Silverberg in Brooklyn. She helped me figure out how to do this when I was, at first I was interning with her during my thesis year, and then in the process of essentially making, when I first made, you know, for my, for grad school, I made over 2,000, so you see pretty quickly what's happening. And then when I redid this process many years later, I had to re-remember what was happening, because I had to remake all, I'd thrown out all the molds a long time ago, because I thought I would never gonna, I was like, I never want to make that another brick again, but.
Oh my goodness. And if you are just joining us, this is WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And you are listening to DIY Oberlin, a show featuring makers, crafters, artists, and hackers, and tinkerers of all ages and varieties with strong ties to Oberlin and surrounding communities. This week on DIY Oberlin, we're speaking with internationally renowned artist Amy Lee. Amy is an Oberlin alum, a papermaker, and is a leading authority on the history and technique of Korean papermaking and related crafts.
So this is, well, this would be for Western style, so.
So this room, this is a beta room,
but I set up to make paper in here because there's a floor drain that's more accessible than the floor drain in the other room.
And is this that same brown paper we were just looking
at?
This is the
last of the stock that came out of the beater.
Love paper making stuff.
And then just to try to get the last bits out.
And it's been a while since I've taken a workshop, so I'm forgetting all my vocabularies. Like charging?
Yeah, I'm charging that. Yep. Just rinsing down the sides of the vats or the bucket to get the last bits of pulp. Claws all the way down to the floor of the vat, and I'm just shaking it around to try to agitate all of the fiber so that it disperses evenly. And it's also been sitting for a little while, so.
What is the sort of look that you're got? Because it looks like waves on top. It's very beautiful, these kind of like
it's not even like, I don't even think about the waves. I just am looking at the consistency in the vat to see if it's even. Like usually when you've been away from the vat, you come in the morning and it's all the pulp is settled to the bottom and there's more water on the top. So you don't want that look. You want it all evenly mixed. So because it's a vat and does not like a jar with a lid, I can't like shake it. So it's almost like the action of if you wanted to agitate. But you really have to get to the bottom because you know, the whole thing to be mixed. And so that I pulled the whole tool through the slurry to pick up the pulp, and then you kind of have to shake it very quickly in both directions to kind of disperse the fiber evenly, and then you just let the water drain out.
It's the best sound.
Yeah. So you don't want too much water in your tool or in the sheet, because if you turned it too quickly and there was still a lot of water, the weight of the water would just take everything off and it would fall back into the vat. So then I'm gonna try to match this up to the last sheet. and face down, and then like closing and opening a book.
And remind me that couching?
Couching.
Couching, sorry.
Well, I spelled like that. And technically it comes from French. It's like coucher. So really we should be saying couching. And this is more of a slow draining pulp because I left it in the beater over an hour. And there's some avoca in there too. If it was just straight cotton, it probably would drain a lot faster. And then here I'm just like, there's like little bits of pulp here that can go there. So it's nice to kiss that off.
So you're just dabbing each side.
Yeah, because the water will grab it. And then the last bit is just dribbling the excess water off one corner of the mold. And then I was always taught when you start couching, you never couch from the side that you've been dripping off of.
Oh, really?
It's like a lot more water here, and you can get more distortion in the sheets. So I would want to then I go from this side. And normally, this is not the ideal setup. Normally, you'd be set up so I could just immediately just go. But here, I have a little bit of a walk around. And then set it up.
So do you normally do your papermaking in the other?
Well, I do the Korean papermaking in the other, in the baking mat.
Yeah.
So let me just get no, it's fine. I mean, this is the thing, is I'm trying to work less traditionally in terms of I don't want to have a wet floor. Like the drain is like should be like for emergencies, but so the dream is like this stainless steel top is just a top from a used kitchen supply warehouse. This like Greek guy down close to downtown, he just sells all this kind of stuff, and I was like, oh, a top that has, do you see there's a hole?
Ooh.
So then I can drain. So basically, it's a big tray.
Yeah.
And then and that's something like when I taught in Toronto, Paper House, they had someone build them custom tables where it was basically a stainless steel tray with a hole that you could plug. And then it was on top of a wooden base with a shelf that would hold the bucket that would hold.
Wow.
And then it was on wheels so you could wheel it around. And that's what I would like. Eventually,
that's cool.
I'm not at the point where I can commission like custom work, and that's. But it is like people don't always realize like if you want to do this kind of work, you have to be really well connected to people who like work with steel and can weld, and then those people find what you do very weird, and also don't want to work in like tiny quantities. You know, they're used to industrial like.
Right.
Make me, you know, because it is a lot of work to set up each job.
Oh, goodness. Well, there are so many different specialty tools. I mean, there's the table.
Right. There's this beater, too, which, I'm just going to now turn. I'm going to turn this upside down. Yeah, like this beater, which, I mean, it's, you can see that there are the knives in there.
Did you buy this from?
I bought it used from a lady in her 90s who's gone blind and couldn't make paper anymore.
Oh, wow.
Hadn't used it for a while.
Mm.
But it's a Valley beater that, I learned on a beater that was like this one. But that was one of the first beaters I ever used in grad school in Chicago. And I'm used to these machines, but makes doing work like this a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, I mean.
So it's this like oval shaped thing. And so the paper or the pulp goes through in a sort of circular. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so I don't think we have quite enough time. Because I was like, I could try to run a load. I don't really need to right now, but you can see this is.
Oh, cool.
That smells.
What is, it's, because I see like text on there.
It's recycled paper.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So,
just a whole bunch of different.
I hear, you might as well.
Instead of paper shredding.
Oh my God. I get so mad when people are like, oh, let's take office scraps and make paper. I'm like, no, no, it's the worst quality. No, why would you do that? Don't do that. I just have to make sure not to.
If I go now, oh, I can't get it on the other side.
This is. If you can try to, it's
like pull it.
Pull it a little closer to the sink, basically. It's just to go closer.
Okay.
You can see that. Is there a wooden lid back behind on the shelf?
Yeah.
And actually, the wooden lid, it fits right on the back of there, so you can just. Perfect. So, you have to fill the beater with water.
Mm-hmm.
And any of this residue is just. Sometimes this beater, it's hard to clean out well because it has a diaphragm that sits below the level of the floor of the trough. So, and I wasn't able to get, I was trying to get, I don't know if you can see these. These are the hoses that lead to, you can hook it up to water so that instead of me using a hose, I could have that hooked up to a water line and then I could just turn it on and it would fill from the inside.
Mm.
But I haven't used that because I like to roll this thing around. But technically, I think you should also be able to drain it from there.
Mm.
But I can't get the faucet to, I think it's just something, it's just never been, it's not been used in so long. I might have to cut some lines if I.
No.
But I have to fill the. You want to fill it pretty high. Okay.
How often do you usually beat pulp?
Well, it depends on what I'm working on because usually what I do is I usually beat. Just do me a favor and hold this so the pulse doesn't fall out.
Yep.
Just draining out this kind of old water that these scraps were sitting in. And so this is not traditionally how, like, usually I'm working with fiber. So, like, see all that fiber?
Mm-hmm.
See how it's much longer than the pieces you saw? I usually work with that, and then I beat by hand.
Mm.
But when I'm working, when I'm recycling,
mm-hmm.
So these are, like, these paper scraps, I've been collecting them for years.
Mm.
So all the like little bits of paper that I cut off of when I'm weaving or whatever, or some of them are even pieces that I don't want anymore.
Mm.
Or so I just collect them until I weigh them out on the baby scale.
Mm. Literally a baby scale for babies.
And then once I get to a pound, I can run a batch to the theater, so.
Oh.
And I have to, you know, obviously be in the mood to do that, but. And then I just, with this, you actually don't have to be too long because it's recycled, but. Okay, now I'm gonna try to get.
Go.
Well, no, this, I don't want you to one hand that.
Okay, I can put it down for a second, too.
This is what I'm going to do. This, okay, now we have a path.
Okay.
So, I'm going to turn it on.
So you put small clumps in. It's like confetti.
Shortly after Amy ran the beater, we wrapped up our tour and I headed back to Oberlin. It was a wonderful treat to visit Amy in her studio, and I thought it might be nice to wrap up this series with part of our conversation from the week prior, where Amy is describing the importance of learning from the people around you and staying in touch and in contact with your teachers, because so much of what she's describing aligns with the aspirations for this series.
The most powerful thing is not in knowing everything, but in knowing how to get the information. And it's not online. This is not about going online to search for it or asking the chatbot. It's really knowing the people who have these deep resources and connections. So, and then going out into the world, I mean, that I see my students being much, getting to where I got much faster than I did. And some of that I think is just, I was slow to do everything. But also because I think I set a lot of groundwork for them for an example, so that they could see that it was possible. And I think that they have more savvy about really tapping into their teachers. I didn't know that you could ask your professors even after you left for help or for, I mean, yes, you could ask for a recommendation here or there, but I didn't really understand that they were there for you to help advise you professionally as well. So that has been really great for, especially for grad school. For me, my teachers became my friends and or became my colleagues. And so in the best case scenario, that's what happens.
I feel really fortunate that I've had the opportunity to get to speak to so many wonderful makers, artists, creators over the course of this summer. If you're interested in being on DIY Oberlin in the future, I hope to bring this back next summer. So please reach out to me and join our Facebook group at DIY Oberlin. And we'll see you next time. Okay, it's time for our two PSAs. Visit historic Oberlin buildings and hear stories of the community and college, tales of college life, scientific discovery, and new ways to stay hygienic and healthy. Tours take place on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. $6 for adults, college students, and those under 18 are free. Reservations are appreciated. Tours start at the Monroe House. Oberlin Community Services, OCS, is a responsive, community-based organization that serves low-income and vulnerable community members by providing food, financial assistance, referrals, educational outreach, and other basic needs. For more information, check out oberlincommunityservices.org. The opening credits for DIY Oberlin are an excerpt from my piece, Limit Switch, as performed by Oberlin Professor Percussion Ross Carr. The closing credits are by Kira Saltz.